Ah, yes. Colorado Avalanche up 2-0 on the Edmonton Oilers after last night's shutout victory. Joining us on the line, Ken Weeb from Sportsnet, who's in Denver and has the late flight, thankfully for me. Ken, how are you today?
Matty, I'm doing tremendous. I'm not going to bust out the karaoke, but I am bobbing my head like I was in the arena last night. Nice work on the tunes there.
Okay, so my question to you is, do you have any requests for the fans at Ball Arena if this thing goes to Game 5?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm actually enjoy when they crank up the Iron Maiden in the arena as well, which is what they do. But the sing-alongs are only for the 90s songs. And, well, maybe it's early 2000s by now, but I'm definitely here for it like you. The atmosphere is fantastic, and it was classic. I don't think they could catch it on the broadcast, but during that TV timeout, the guy on the tunes who is spinning puts up a sign on a white sheet of paper that says, "Should I play Small Things?" And the crowd went bonkers, and then he played it. And it's just a fabulous, fabulous atmosphere in there for sure. One of the best in the NHL right now for sure.
I was going to say, it looks like a lot of fun. I'll tell you this, the Edmonton Oilers didn't look like they were having a lot of fun last night. Because I said it to Elliot, the first period was, it was frenetic, it just went haywire. And then it's almost as if the Colorado Avalanche took a blanket and put it over top of the Edmonton Oilers and said, okay, you're done for the rest of the night. Did you get that same sense as well?
Yeah, smothering is a great word for the way that they played. And this has been an issue for the Avalanche at times here against the St. Louis Blues last round especially. They had a couple of loose third periods. And even, too, some people would say they're a bit loose in game one in the third after building the lead. But this is something that they made a conscientious effort to do. And I thought they were excellent in terms of the defending portion. They did an outstanding job of nullifying the electricity provided generally by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I appreciate and like the move that Jay Woodcroft made, splitting them up. I know you talked about it a little bit with Elliot, but I think it was more done to try to take advantage of the Avalanche second defense pair, which really struggled in game one, where Josh Manson was -4. But with the great bounce back game from Manson, I don't think that having Draisaitl up against them, you know, ended up doing what Jay had been hoping for before he put them back together in the third. But yeah, incredible job defensively. And that commitment level goes right through. You know, you talked about Arturi Lehkonen. He's such a great conscience on that line. Yeah, Valeri Nichushkin doing a great job on the top line. And Nathan MacKinnon needs credit too, guys. I mean, there's no doubt about this, Matty. Makar and Taves, exceptional. But MacKinnon has been excellent in the one-on-one battle. And he's not cheating for offense, which is one thing that you cannot afford to do when you go up against McDavid.
Yeah, and you know, there would be the thought that maybe a guy like MacKinnon maybe would try and cheat for offense, but he is giving an honest effort at both ends of the ice. And they showed a graphic last night. Nathan MacKinnon has the highest goals per game at home in the playoffs of all time. He's at 0.94 goals per game, and he's been excellent in these playoffs. And just you watch him play, and we see the evolution of Nathan MacKinnon, and he has become a really, really solid two-way player who provides a ton of offense for you, and he's a beast physically as well. Like he's a real load to handle.
He really is, and that's the thing. I think this is kind of, I'm not sure if it, you know, we all want to make the comparison, Gretzky-Lemieux comparisons, and maybe when Lemieux went to the Canada Cup, he had this, you know, watershed moment where he knew he had to play in both ends, but MacKinnon wants to win. I mean, this guy has shown his frustration, worn his heart on his sleeve during these last couple of second round exits, and this is a guy who doesn't care how many points he's piling up. He doesn't need to be the playoff scoring leader, but he is still such an impactful player. But the fact that he's digging in, I mean, no one's mistaking him for a Selke candidate, but you got to dig in if you're going against Connor McDavid, and he is so powerful. That's the thing. McDavid is so just explosive, but MacKinnon is so powerful in his explosion. I mean, he's like a tank on the ice, but at hyper speed. Like he's like Wile E. Coyote. He gets the legs going, and or the Roadrunner, I should say. And man, he's just been fun to watch. And he's so hyper focused. I mean, he didn't want to talk about the matchup whatsoever going in. He wasn't even at the podium last night, letting the other guys sort of soak that part of it in. But this guy is hyper focused on winning it all, and that's all he cares about. And he knows that if he can play defense along with put up some production, they have a better chance of reaching that Stanley Cup final and perhaps, you know, wrapping it all up.
Yeah, it's really nice when the superstars figure that part of it out. Like we saw I'm obviously a little bit biased, but we saw that a little bit with Austin Matthews in Toronto, knowing that you have to play a certain way to win in the playoffs. And Nathan MacKinnon has figured that out. Nathan MacKinnon has figured out that if I'm a physical force, I can be one of the guys that helps lead this team. Another guy that I feel like doesn't get enough of the spotlight, even though he was the leading scorer on this team in the regular season. Granted, MacKinnon and Makar didn't play a full season, but Mikko Rantanen has been excellent in the playoffs. He only has scored 3 goals, but he has 12 assists and 15 points. He's just one of those guys who is the quiet superstar, because he really is a superstar that maybe doesn't get put into that category all that much.
Yeah, you're right, Matty. And, you know, the thing for me, Rantanen had been okay and steady in the first 2 rounds, but he's had a massive impact in the first 2 games here. Obviously, the explosiveness with the 3 goals in just over 2 minutes and the incredible finish yesterday on that pass by Nazem Kadri. But to me, Rantanen is a guy, it's so interesting. Going into the series on the day of the morning skate before game 1, he was asked specifically by someone else, another reporter, and I followed up about the number of chances, or the quality of the chances he was getting. And here's a guy who was just super calm Finn. You know, I know it's not been going great. I know I only have 1 empty net goal, but it's going to come. I'm not worried about that. And sure enough, he bangs one in game 1, bangs one in game 2. And if you're the Oilers and you knew you had to be concerned with Makar and MacKinnon and company, and now all of a sudden Rantanen's looking like the guy who had 36 goals and 92 points, you know, and also Kadri, the way that he's played, now you're thinking, boy, oh boy, they're a team that pushes for offense. There's a lot of weapons that they have to try to, you know, keep under wraps as well, and that's an awfully big challenge. And I know you're talking about with Elliott earlier. I don't think that the Oilers are necessarily playing slow. It's just that the Avalanche play essentially at warp speed, and they make everyone else look slow. I think that's been one of the biggest challenges for the Oilers in the first 2 games, especially the defense core. We know Darnell Nurse is not at 100%. It's been a challenge for the Oilers' defense core. And on the flip side, the Avalanche defense has been excellent. I mean, Elliott talked about Bowen Byram at the end. I thought that Bowen Byram was one of the best players in the game last night. He was exceptional, getting involved offensively, but he's really solidified his defensive portion of the game as well. And that's been critical for them after losing Sam Girard to that just bone-crushing hit from Ivan Barbashev.
Yeah, he's really been able to step up in the absence. But, you know, you talked about the speed there. When you look at the forward group for Colorado, every line has speed, whether it be, you know, the first 2 lines we know all about. But then you look at the third line, Compher, Newhook, Obey Kubel, who was really good last night. And then the fourth line is Darren Helm, Andrew Cogliano, and Logan O'Connor. They just throw speed and speed and speed at you. And, you know, we talked about the Oilers being a really fast team, but I don't even think it's close in terms of overall team speed. I think that award goes to the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, for sure. And you talked about the fourth line. Man, oh, man. The goal from Logan O'Connor to Andrew Cogliano, which ended up being the game winner. I mean, that's not a fourth line play. I mean, Logan O'Connor sells shot the whole way. His cross-ice pass for the backdoor tap is absolutely exceptional. And that's the thing about the Avalanche. They've got players that have been healthy scratches at points in this playoff run that come in and make an immediate contribution. And yeah, the speed game is throughout. That was definitely, when we talked to Jared Bednar yesterday, I was asking him specifically about the trade deadline acquisitions, and they targeted guys for specific roles. But yes, 2 really smart penalty killers, 2 really good skaters, and 2 really responsible defensive guys that can also chip in. And then on the back end, you got a guy like Manson that brings a little bit of edge to what is kind of an undersized defense core. Man, Joe Sakic did just an exceptional job of adding at the deadline, and speed was such an important component to what he was looking for.
Yeah, and it's worked out really well for them. Ken Wiebe from Sportsnet joining Matt Marchese on the Jeff Merrick Show. Okay, in net, if you are Jared Bednar and you have Darcy Kuemper healthy, who do you start in game 3?
Yeah, first and foremost, I don't think that's even part of the equation, Matty, to be frank. This is gamesmanship at its finest, I believe. Day-to-day is a relative and loose term in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so I don't buy for 1 second that Darcy Kuemper is going to be available for game 3. I'm not even sure he's on the plane today, to be quite honest. We're not sure what the injury is. Obviously, Jared is choosing to go by the old coach's mentality that you don't want to show your cards at this time of the year. But after doing a little bit of watching, and Frank Saravalli specifically went back Kuemper took a slapper off the mask from Cody Ceci shortly before he exited the game in game one. So, you know, there's been some talk maybe it could be related to the eye injury from the first round, but to me, it's more likely a concussion. Again, I'm not a doctor. We just play one on the radio and TV once in a while. But I think Pavel Francouz has done enough to have the net. Again, this isn't a situation like, you know, Antti Raanta. If Freddie was ready to go, you put Freddie back in immediately. But I think they've got them. They bought themselves some time. And, you know, there was a reason that the Avalanche said they were confident going into game two with Francouz between the pipes, because they feel that he's a steady option. I mean, he is technically a 1B. We can't ignore the fact that they brought in Darcy Kuemper to be the number one guy. And we also can't ignore the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury was one of the guys on their radar at the deadline time. But, you know, that didn't mean they don't have any confidence in Francouz. They think he's capable. So, again, what a great scene inside the rink, chanting his name. And the game was going so well, and Francouz was so calm that, again, I don't know if the cameras caught it, but he basically gave the old stick-to-glove tap to the fans while they were chanting his name during one of the stoppages yesterday. And it's a great story, because most people thought, you know, including myself, I thought that Francouz could play well and give up four or five last night. But he, you know, instead he pitched a shutout and just did an exceptional job. So I think the net is his until Kuemper is absolutely 100% healthy. And when it comes to concussions, we don't know when that would be, if that is what he's dealing with.
Yeah, it's very true. The concussions are so tricky. I like when somebody says it's a minor concussion. Okay, a brain injury
no
can never
thing.
Be minor, yes. But thank you. Yeah. On the other end of the ice, in the crease, Mike Smith makes 36 saves last night. And I said it earlier, I can't find any blame for Mike Smith last night. You know, he got bombarded with shots because his team just decided to not show up basically for the last 30 minutes of the game. And I can't fault him for any of the goals that were scored. I thought Mike Smith was pretty solid last night.
Yeah, everyone was watching his Smith. I mean, we know his bounce backs have been exceptional. You know, I guess if I would say my one counter argument, I got to be like Elliot and argue with you on at least one thing. The Manson slap shot, it was a good shot, but that's probably one that Mike Smith would have liked to have had. Obviously, he can't do anything about the lost glove special. You know, I mentioned Fleury before that happened to him against Kyle Connor earlier this year in a power play. But boy, oh boy, I thought that Smith really battled hard. And man, the save on Taves early got him going. And he really kind of did his best to keep his team in it. And I mean, I agree with you. After that huge kill on the 5-on-3, Jesse Puljujärvi, one of the shots went right over the net. He had a clear tap in front, and I thought unless I missed it in our angle, I thought he airmailed the net. I know he made one save against him, but he airmailed a perfect chance that would have really got the Oilers going. And after that, Francouz was just steady. So yeah, I agree with you. I mean, some folks around here who don't watch the Oilers were kind of like, whoa, Koskinen was really good in game one. Do you think they go to him? And I'm like, Koskinen is great in a small sample size, but Mike Smith is, you know, the alley cat, as Jay Woodcroft pointed out. He's not a house cat. This guy scratches and claws for everything, and I don't think there's any question that we're going to see Smith versus Francouz in game three. And for game four, we'll kind of see what happens.
Yeah, you can't blame your goalie when you don't score any goals. That's usually how it works. Ken, we're right up against it. Thanks so much for taking some time, and a safe flight to Edmonton for game three. All the best, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Enjoy the series, and happy birthday to your mom. I'll join the chorus on that front as well.
Thank you very much. There he goes, Ken Wiebe from Sportsnet from Denver as he awaits his flight to Edmonton for game three. You know, I'll say this again. Mike Smith was, as we kind of expected last night, because we know what his numbers are in game two as an Edmonton Oiler. You know, he takes the loss last night, but when your team doesn't score any goals, when your team has seven shots in the last 30 minutes of a game, probably not the greatest thing for the goalie to help him along the way, especially after you scored six in the previous game. That's it for the first hour. When we come back, Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada will join us. We'll go through the Rangers series with the Lightning. We'll also talk about Daryl Sutter. And, of course, we'll talk about the Avs jumping out to a 2-0 lead. And really looking forward to this one, the bottom of the hour, Sam Rosen, the legendary Rangers broadcaster, joins us. Matt Marchese in for Jeff Merrick on The Jeff Merrick Show. Back in a few.
Discuss discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back. Hour two of the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff, who is on assignment and will be back on Monday. Joining me on the line right now, one of my favorite people in this business, one of my favorite people of all time, and he's the gift master himself, at Stu Monroe, Anthony Stewart, joining me on the program. Stewie, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just leaving the mall. I had to turn one of my jackets into a vest, so I had to pick it up from the seamstress, so I'm running some errands today.
Okay, hold on a second. Why did you have to turn one of your jackets into a vest?
Well, other than short of being a style icon, I don't think I'm ready for the tight shirt weather. I don't think the body's ready for tight shirt weather yet. So I gotta have a little bit of a cover up, a little bit of a something to cover it up a little bit there. Cover the Stewie, barrel, as they say.
Stewie, I will tell you this: my body has never been ready for the tight shirt weather. Not once have I ever been able to say that. So I know how you feel. That actually is a good kind of segue into the tight shirt weather. I said it to Ken Weeb before. Last night, it really did feel like the Colorado Avalanche put on a tight shirt on the Edmonton Oilers, because that to me was a defensive clinic in the second and third period.
Yeah, as much as it was a clinic, I think they just outskated them, and I think that's the forte for this Colorado team, where they just outpace you. And, you know, Edmonton Oilers, they have the quick guys in McDavid and Yamamoto, but as a team, the Colorado Avalanche, you can easily say they're at least a half a step, maybe a full step of everybody in the whole entire National Hockey League. You're looking at McKinnon, and who just matches McDavid, especially on the defensive end, where he's tracking him through the neutral zone, or even Makar when he gets a loose puck and he's gone to the races. And, you know, you're looking at Landeskog and some of these other guys. It's just, it's fun to watch, and it turns me almost back into a hockey fan, where you appreciate the finer points of the game. So, you know, the one thing about, you know, the Edmonton Oilers yesterday, you could say, yeah, you know what, Mike Smith was a little bit shaky. You know, he was looking like, instead of an alley cat, you know, looking like he was at two cats the whole entire night. You know, I don't think Edmonton really brought it last night, where that second half, it just looked like they were almost defeated before the game was even over.
Yeah, and the first period was, the pace was incredible. And I thought for sure you'd see three or four goals in that first period, and we didn't see any. But you're right, it did feel like after that first period that Colorado just completely outskated and outmatched the Oilers. You know, I went into that game thinking, it's the backup goalie, Pavel Francouz. I mean, he didn't look great when he came in for Kemper after he left with injury. So this is going to be Edmonton's game, and we're going to go back to Edmonton all square. I thought he was really good last night.
Yeah, you know, he was solid, and I think that's what you need. You don't need spectacular. You need solid goaltending. And again, he's a player that proved that he's a National Hockey League goaltender. You know, he played in the Czech. He's coming over from Czech Republic. He's a solid guy. Fronts the puck really, really well. And you know, I think just because of the year that Kemper had, you know, he was sort of pushed to the back end. But he is a serviceable goaltender too. And you know, just looking at that game last night, you know, it's Rantanen scores, you know, to make it 3-0. There's 6 minutes left. You're like, well, you know, if Edmonton gets one before the second period's up, they're going to make it a game. And they didn't really even have that push that they usually have, you know, to get back into games that sort of helped them out throughout the season, where they were down one or two, they'd find a way to get back in. But, you know, just the way that Colorado's fitness just took over that game, it was really, really tough to watch for the Oilers on their end.
Okay, I want to ask you a question about playing against a certain goaltender. So Francouz catches right-handed, and Kelly brought it up on the broadcast last night, and I brought it up with Elliot as well. How much does that throw you off as a player when you see that right-handed goaltender? Because that, to me, like, that was part of the reason why Darnell Nurse didn't score on that chance he had at the end of the second, which could have changed the game entirely. But how much does that screw you up when you're going in to shoot on a guy? Because, you know, not that I was ever as good as anybody, but I'm always looking to go top left, which is glove side. Can't do that on the right-handed goalie. Does that mess you up at all?
I think it does, and I go back to my playing days where I played with Thomas Vokoun, and it was really, really tough to, score on him in practice. And I think what happens is it makes you try to adjust your shot. You're coming in, and it takes a split second to adjust the angle, and that split second, that's all that goaltender needs to sort of say, okay, you know what? They know where you're going. So I think with those right-handed catching goaltenders, they sort of the shooters broadcast where they're going to go, so it makes it a lot easier for them. So I think it's actually an advantage for Franchos right now because, again, it just seems that, it's tough to score on them. And you're seeing Darnell Nurse come across. You know, he's pushing to his strong side there where normally if he's going to the glove side, it's usually going in. So it's definitely an advantage right now that's working for him as he's the starting goaltender for now for the Avalanche.
Can you explain to me why the second periods have been so wild in these playoffs? Like I said, last night, the first period was the pace was great. It looked like it was going to be a high-scoring period. Nothing happened. And then the second periods in these playoffs seem to be where the majority of the damage has been done. We saw the crazy second period in game one of this series. We saw it in game one of the Flames and Oilers series. I mean, is there something to that, or is it just merely a coincidence that the second period seemed to be where the most action is?
Well, if it was me going back to my playing days, I think just, you almost get too tired to pay attention that much to the details. And, I don't think the common fan realizes the attention to detail you have to pay attention to in the video room, on systems, on each individual players. It's crazy. You could spend 15, 20 minutes talking about one player. Some of these meetings could be up to 2 hours as you go through the roster. So that first period, you're focusing, okay, oh, no, you know what? The third line's coming off. I got to change. Or, you know what? This face-off here, we have to win it here and get the puck there. So there's so much intricate systems when it comes to the playoffs. And, you can pay attention to those details, I think, for a little bit. But as fatigue starts to set in, it makes it really, really tough. And eventually just say, you know what, the floodgates are open. So it's almost like a boxing match, right? They're going to play a little bit of defense the first quarter of the fight, but then it opens up as it goes on. So say what you will, it's good for the fans. And, we heard Wehner talking, obviously he was on Sportsnet, of course, talking about, to win championships, he was the leading goal scorer of all time. And, you had to pay attention to those details on the defensive end. But for me as a fan, I love watching this wild style high-scoring games for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm totally on board with you. I never played defense a lick in my life, so I don't need to watch it either. Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada joining Matt Marchese on the Jeff Merrick Show. We saw Nazem Kadri in Toronto. He had his issues staying on the ice, and they brought it up last night. I think he had 10 points in 31 playoff games in Toronto, and he has 31 points, or maybe it's more now. Maybe it's 32 in 30 games in Colorado. Is it just a maturity thing with him, or is he doing something different on the ice? Is it because he's playing with better players? How can you explain the emergence of Nazem Kadri as a really, really, at this point, prolific scorer in the playoffs?
Well, first things first, I just want to make sure that everyone at the studio checked on Ryan Favreau last night because he was tweeting about this, and it was such a sad tweet, and me and my style just skipped him to death with it as opposed to sharing his sympathy. But that just shows, how much of an impact I think he had on this Toronto team. And, the one thing, again, I know he had his downs and, with the discipline issues, but the one thing that I think, they should have kept him around was the cost certainty. They have not been able to find a guy at that price point to do what Nazem Kadri does at $4.5 million as a second line center, bringing that many points, but that much intensity. And it's a fine line, especially in the playoffs. And, you saw yesterday when the Oilers started getting out of hand with the running around, the camera always panned to Kadri, and you saw what he was doing. He was looking at that bench saying, hey, guys, if you want to go this game, I can play this game as well, too. So that just shows there's the goals and the assists and the point side, but he brings that accountability where, hey, he can play it any which way. And, I think with him, it's just about a maturation. Right, the less that he's not suspended, the less that he's in the lineup, the more points he's putting up, and it's going to be more so for better for him getting money down the line. So, say what you will, I think Toronto made a big mistake in letting him go, but in hindsight, it's 2020. But he's a great player, and I think he's going to be a great player for the next number of years wherever he ends up after these playoffs.
Yeah, he's been a real breath of fresh air in that lineup, and a guy that, like you said, when you have those guys in the playoffs that can play any which way, makes such a big difference. We've gone about nine minutes here, and we haven't talked about that opening sequence where Cale Makar makes, you know, Elliot called it maybe a signature moment with that defensive play where we know what Connor McDavid's going to do, but when he goes at that speed, it's really hard to stop him when he tries to go outside in. And Cale Makar was with him step for step, made the play, and turned the puck around, and off they went. It was almost as if it was easy for Cale Makar, which is not an easy task against Connor McDavid.
So you're essentially saying Cale Makar is the answer to Connor McDavid, and he's better, and he needs the Conn Smythe. Is that what you're saying?
I am not saying anything. I've been when you host this show, people start to tweet you and send you DMs and stuff. So I'm just gonna let you answer the question.
Yeah, well, I'll say it like this. You know, you're looking at some of these goals that McDavid has been scoring over the years. You know, just going end to end and going through teams. It's usually on the veteran guys, and the veteran guys are sort of worried about, you know, getting embarrassed or, you know, ending up on a poster. And I think some of these younger guys coming into the league, they have no fear. They're not worried about being in, but they just go out and play. And Makar is the definition and the epitome, just going out and playing. And he's not worried about making mistakes. He's not worried about turning the puck over. He is go, go, go. He's on his toes 24/7. So I'm not shocked in any sense of the word that, you know, he doesn't have any fear playing against, you know, a player like McDavid, because, you know, he can match his speed and lateral movement, and, you know, he's got a great stick, and, you know, his backwards edges are immaculate, for lack of better words, as well, too. So for Makar, you know, I think that's what sets him apart from, you know, the other players. He just brings that electricness. He's an electric player every single shift. You just want to see what he's going to do next. And, you know, it's easy to say he's the Nathan MacKinnon on defense or the Connor McDavid on defense. And this kid is going to be a superstar. And, you know, I can't wait for another 4 years for the Olympics to kind of see what he can do at the Olympics.
Yeah, let's hope the NHLers go. Okay, the you talked about the skating ability and the edge work there of Makar. You coach these younger kids and you do skill sessions with pros and all that kind of stuff. Are we seeing a change in skating styles now? Because when I was growing up and you and I are roughly around the same age, it was a lot about, hey, do your crossovers and straight line speed. Now it seems like we've completely shifted towards, yes, you do need the straight line speed, but what's more important is your agility and being able to go side to side, as you know, not necessarily as opposed to going up and down.
Well, you're looking at you know, McDavid and MacKinnon, and when they're going through that neutral zone, their legs are always turning. Their feet are almost going like a you know, at 1.5 speed faster than everybody else. And I think that's just sort of the style that these kids are coming up. And you know, the one thing I noticed with the kids, it's not just the sight of them skating, I can hear their edges. And normally, you know, you don't hear that. And, you know, it brings me back to my days as a pro where you don't hear that, you know, them digging into the ice like that, unless it's an NHL practice or a pro practice. But I'm hearing that edge work at 12, 13, 14 years old. So I'm looking like, are these kids 200 pounds? No, they're just that powerful digging into the ice and with their strides and their edge work. So, you know, I'm on the ground with the minor hockey, and I'm seeing some of these kids now that are going into the OHL, and they're going to be going into pro in the next couple of years. I can't picture the game in the next 10, 15 years where it's going to be. Are they going to be looking at videos of me, you know, when I played, and be like, look at that dinosaur, he's brutal. And that was only like 20 years ago. So the game is trending into such a fast game where I don't know what they're going to do. If everyone's that big, that fast, that strong, like, you know, we might be playing on Olympic guys. That's the only way to manage the speed and the explosiveness. So any way you dice it, it's going to be great for the game. It's going to be great as a visual aid to be watching these kids and watching the future of the game. I'm definitely excited, not just as a player, but as a fan as well.
Yeah, lots to get excited about. And some of these young kids coming up, I mean, the talent level coming into the league is off the charts, and the league is getting younger and younger seemingly every year. Okay, let's move on to Rangers and Lightning. You can catch that one on CBC and Sportsnet at 8:00. The Rangers came out with basically a perfect game in game one. I don't think you could have asked for anything better. Shesterkin was incredible with 37 saves, and Vasilevsky just, I didn't think he was bad. I actually thought he was pretty good despite giving up 6 goals. But I don't think the Rangers can expect that same Lightning team in game two, can they?
No, and you hear John Cooper speak. He said his team is probably the most resilient group in rebounding from a loss, right? And you see the records and you see what Vasilevskiy does. But, you know, they're so well coached and so well managed that as a group, they don't really need the coach to tell them, hey, this is what exactly we need to do to recover. They know based on their play. And that's sort of what makes them scary now, where, you know, I still think they're the betting favorite to win the series, you know, even though they got beat 6-2. So, you know, it goes back to the saying, is it rest versus rust? It's tough to mimic and duplicate that that playoff feeling in practice. So being off 8 days, it's really going to have an effect on them. So I think it's going to take them a couple days to rebound. And, you know, but I see them being the favorite in this series. And again, I've been discounting the Rangers since series one, so I got to put a little bit more respect on their name. They're playing some great hockey, and Shesterkin as well. So I still think Tampa's the favorite here, and I got my money on them.
Yeah, you got to put respect on their name, right, Stewie?
Respect with a K, yes, absolutely.
So the Lightning, I thought Nikita Kucherov wasn't very good in game one. He did look off that, like you said, that rest versus rust thing. But I said this, I think it was yesterday. I do wonder if, yes, the 9 days off maybe hurt the Lightning in game one of that series, but it does feel like that 9 days rest could actually help them more in the long run, despite what happened in game one, just because they'll just be healthier and they've gotten the rust off and it's all systems go going forward.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder now, like, you know, how much can they really go, you know, without Braden Point in the lineup? And I'm not sure of his status too, but that just shows how much he means to his team. Usually when it's not going, you know, Kucherov's not going or Stamkos, Point is usually a guy that can really drive a line too. And, you know, just going back to Kucherov, he was a dash too, but he did have 7 shots. I think his agent just texted me that just now in Russian with a couple expletives. But you know, this team just has so much depth, and every given night everyone else steps up on a different night. And, you know, you've seen some other guys do it, and Paul, and, you know, seen Maroon and Perry. So I think they just have too much depth at this point to really say, hey, it's anything other than just a one-off where they're going to adjust and come back ready for game two.
Yeah, they just have that ability. They bring these guys in, and they just fit. Like, how many
yeah,
players
I
have we seen
back.
The Lightning bring in?
Think, I want to come back, put me on the third line, and give me $1 million. I honestly think I could do it in this system.
Well, you know what, Stu? I mean, the one thing is that it's certainly not as physical even when you played. So, I mean, you do have that advantage where you would be one of the bigger guys throwing their weight around. Maybe people would leave you alone as opposed to when you played.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't have to have guys like Brashear and Jody Shelley and, you know, Thornton chasing me around. The game has definitely changed, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely has. On the Rangers side, I've been waxing poetic about Mika Zibanejad just because he's such a treat to watch. And we can look back on the trade from Ottawa that brought him over. And, you know, at that time, Ottawa was in a different place. And they make the deal for Derek Brassard. And Brassard was fine for the Senators. But Mika Zibanejad has been one of the key reasons why this Rangers, you know, quote-unquote rebuild happened so quickly. And they're back in the Eastern Conference Final, because he's been great in these playoffs. And he's had a couple of lulls, but 21 points in the playoffs is certainly nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and I know Panarin's getting a lot of the accolades on just what's going on with this group too, but he's a major driver, you know, of this team. And, you know, you people say, yeah, you know, he got lucky when he scored 40 goals a couple of years ago. But you go back to the goal he scored in that power play where he went middle bar down on Vasilevskiy. How many players can really make that shot on a you know, off-balance snapshot? So he's a sniper, and I think people really discount his goal scoring ability with the likes of Panarin being there and Kreider scoring, you know, 50 plus goals too. But again, I really, really like his game. I love his entries. I love his tenacity. And what separates him, I think, from some of the other players, he's doing it in the playoffs. You know, other guys are electric in the regular season and tend to tail off. For him to bring it, you know, in the playoffs, you know, under the spotlights of a Madison Square Garden where there's a lot of pressure in that market, that's what I think sets him apart. But I think, you know, just as other players, he had to go through those growing pains of being in Ottawa and learning how to lose and learning, you know, what it takes to be a pro. So, You know, you talk about top 15 players in the league. How do you keep out Zibanejad just based on what he's doing in the playoffs? And, you know, I know it's McDavid getting all the accolades for the Conn Smythe and, you know, Shesterkin, but you have to put him, you know, in the conversation just based on some of the big, big goals and big, big moments he's having so far for the Rangers.
Well, he's third in scoring in the playoffs, so, I mean, that's pretty good. And his teammate Adam Fox is right behind him with 20 points. I wanted to ask you a question about putting together lines. Obviously, like, you coach minor hockey, that's one thing. But when you were a player, were you ever in a situation like the kid line in New York where you just played with a bunch of younger guys? And, you know, Borny brought it up on the broadcast, Justin Bourne, for those listening. He brought it up on the broadcast about being able to play with younger guys and not deferring to maybe older, more established players. And maybe that's why the kid line is working out so well for New York.
Well, in Carolina, I played with Jocelyn and Tim Brent, but they called us the Oriole line. We were the Oriole line out there. But I think it wasn't because we were young. But for me, you know, I didn't mind the mixing and matching of lines just because, you know, I didn't care if I was on the second line or the fourth line as long as I got some power play time. And that sort of was the, you know, the concession I made with, you know, being in the lineup too. But I think it goes back to when we were talking about Cale Makar. When you're young and you're in this moment, you don't really know the gravity of it. You just go out and play. So I think this kid line going out there, you know, if they were really, you know, basking in the moment and trying to, you know, really know what it meant, I think they wouldn't be playing as well. So it's good job by Gallant, where he's really now, you know, explaining their roles and what's expected out of them, but keeping that pressure off of them, probably just saying, hey, guys, go out and just play the game. Go do your thing. You guys will be fine. And when you have that pressure off of you, I think it really, really, you know, helps your performance. And I go back to my days in Atlanta where, you know, I was up and down with the team the year before and, you know, was sent down from the Florida Panthers. And, you know, we had a coach in Craig Rams, and he said, Stewie, you know what? I don't care if you're -4, just go out and play the game. Whatever player you are in your mind, just go out and do that. Stick to the system. You know, don't be throwing pizzas up the middle. Watch the blue lines, but just go out and play. And when I had a coach that believed in me, you know, I had my best season statistically where I almost, you know, I had 14 goals, 40 points, and I was on the second line the whole entire year. So that's, I think you got to give a lot of credit to Gallant for having these guys not really worried about the pressure of the moment, just going out and playing hockey. That's why they're having success.
Well, the one guy that maybe, well, I mean, you could point to a multitude of guys because lots of guys have had really good years, but Ryan Reeves was a really integral part to the Vegas Golden Knights. And then under Pete DeBoer, at times in the playoffs was a scratch. And now he comes to New York, plays for a familiar face in Gerard Gallant. And, you know, he's going to play in his 100th playoff game. I mean, there was a chance that if he didn't go to New York, that maybe his career was on a different trajectory. But again, he's not going to provide you any offense. We get that. But Ryan Reeves has a role, and it seems like he relishes that role under a guy like Gerard Gallant. And that, to me, speaks to how Gerard Gallant is as a coach and being that player's coach.
Yeah, and I think that could be a lesson to some of the other coaches that have aspirations of really going a couple rounds, and is treating the veteran guys with respect, the guys that have been around for a while like Reeves. And you're looking at Reeves, and you're looking at guys like Maroon, and you're looking at Corey Perry. You know what the commonality is between all three of them is the coach just leaves them alone. Doesn't be messing with their ice time, doesn't be taking them in and out of the lineup, doesn't be, you know, you know, in the media making comments. They just let them go, and they live and die with these veteran guys that, you know, at the key moments, they're going to have their two or three big moments that's going to help get you through the playoffs. And, you know, some other teams, we're not going to say who, you know, they're sort of messing around with these veteran guys saying, well, we need this. Well, for them to be able at 1,000 games in the league and then be around this long, they know what it takes. They know expectations. They're their hardest critics. You don't need to be messing around with their ice time. But, you know, we talk about there's guys that get you to the playoffs and there's guys that get you through. It's the guys like Maroon and Perry and players like Ryan Reeves with the New York Rangers.
I'm glad you brought up Perry there because I want to get your take on this. I've always been of the opinion that if you are a player that comes into the league that is, you know, very fast and you rely on your speed to play your game, that, you know, it's a lot harder to adjust later in your career when the wheels literally start to fall off. Whereas a guy like Corey Perry has never really had to worry about that. So when he gets a little bit slower, it doesn't really matter because he can still be effective because he's never really had to play the game at a high speed and he's relied on physicality and his smarts to get him through his career, which to me is why at, you know, his age right now and with all the miles on him, he still maintained the ability to be a very successful player.
Yeah, and I go back to my minor hockey days playing against Corey Perry, where he played for the Peterborough Petes, and we played at the All-Ontarios against each other. And, you know, we go back to World Juniors where, you know, they were going to cut him, but they brought him in as a 13th forward. They asked him if he was okay with that role, and he said yes. And one game later, you know, he's on the top line with Crosby and Bergeron. So that just shows what type of player he grows on you, right? And I can understand, you know, he wouldn't be having that success if they were, you know, worried about his fitness levels or his scores or his body fat or him not producing in a month. You know what you're going to get from Corey Perry in game one of the playoffs and game 20 if you go 20 games. You're going to get that, what you need, going to the net, scoring those timely goals, roughing it up, being a bit of a worm, as they would say. That's what you need. Every team needs a Corey Perry. So, you know, I don't get it when teams sign some of these guys and they bring them in and say, well, you know, you didn't score 10 goals in the month of December, so we're going to go bring in someone else. Well, no, that's not what you brought me in. And I always use the example of Joel Ward, where we used to always talk about, hey, Joel, you got to pick up your training. Let's go. You know, training camp is, he's like, you know, it's not even April yet. And that's when he showed up, because they knew in April he was going to show up and score some big goals for whatever team he was playing with in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Corey Perry did, like you said, he started off slow in the regular season, but he still finished with 19 goals, his highest total since 2016-2017. Stewie, going to let you go here. Just one more. Daryl Sutter, Jack Adams Award winner. I mentioned it to Elliot. He disagreed with me. It was the first time that he disagreed with me all show, so it was quite surprising. But to me, it seems like Daryl Sutter has at least changed the perception of himself. Whether that be the case or not, it does feel like he seems like a different type of coach, even though maybe what he believes in and how he actually coaches hasn't changed.
Yeah, well, like him or love him, you have to respect him, because he's getting results. And I think more credit needs to be brought in to Tree Living, who brought Sutter in, because he was the exact style of coach that was needed for this group. And they had some guys underachieving, some guys that needed a fire lit under their butts. And they brought him in, and, you know, I remember, I think it was Jeff, or I don't know, I'm not going to sue Jeff on his own program where he's not here, but there was a lot of people saying, oh, all these other coaches that are out there, how do you bring him in? Oh, they're bringing the dinosaur in, but he's quieted all that noise. And say what you will, and I'm sure he's adapted to the times, but he gets the most out of his group, and that's what you need. So he's getting the results. Yeah, you ruffle some feathers, but I think now with some of the younger guys coming in the league, they need that. They need to learn what it's like to be a National Hockey Leaguer, the day-to-day grind where, you know, you're watching Calgary's practices. Every day is a hard practice. There's no days off that you earn your paycheck. But say, look at guys like Goudreau. You know, Goudreau, he was almost going to scratch him last year, and, you know, he's coming in now where he's probably going to get all the money. And he's getting the most of some of these guys. So like him or love him, he gets results, which is money for the players and wins in the win column, which is good for the city of Calgary. And congratulations to him. I didn't have a vote, but if I did, I definitely would be voting for Sutter, absolutely.
Nobody would have thought 340 goal scorers and 200-point scorers under Daryl Sutter. I would promise you that. Stu, you've been very generous with your time. Enjoy your new vest.
I'm not bad on that.
Oh, buddy, I don't even want to know, because I would never have made the money. That would have been a sucker bet for me.
Where's Gabby and Andy? I need a prop. I need an app update on that. All right, thanks, Marty and Addy.
Enjoy your vest, pal. There he goes, all right. Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Heavy on time, but when we come back, the legendary Sam Rosen, Rangers TV play-by-play voice, joins us as we get you set for Game 2 between the Rangers and Lightning. Matt Marchese in for Jeff Merrick on The Jeff Merrick Show. You're listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff, who will be back on Monday, the final segment of the week on the Jeff Merrick Show. Pleased to be joined on the line by the legendary, and I'm going to get a little fanboy here because he is one of my favorite play-by-play broadcasters, and that is Sam Rosen. Sam, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excellent. You know, I got caught up in the YouTube hole of, you know, you watch one thing or whatever, and then I started watching some of your greatest calls. And for me, it's the Zibanejad 5-goal game, because I absolutely love, like, the crescendo just goes up after every single goal because it's something special. This may be a kind of a weird question, but is there one call, maybe it's the Stanley Cup, maybe it's something else, that really stands out for you as your favorite?
It has to be the Stanley Cup, because it was so special. It was home at Madison Square Garden. There were the couple of icings that stalled the final horn from going off. They had to have a couple of face-offs, and finally the Rangers won the Cup. So it was the call. But, you know, I've been so lucky doing the Ranger games for as long as I have to see so many great players come through. Wayne Gretzky came through, and of course we had Mark Messier, maybe the best Ranger of all time, the all-time Ranger. Rod Gilbert, when I first started covering the Rangers, was finishing up his career. There have been Brian Leetch, and I go on and on and on. So many Hall of Famers. Mike Gartner came here, and Marcel Dion, and to call their games was something that's so special, it never leaves me. And what I think about it, that we, you know, I was able to watch, to me, the greatest player of all time in Wayne Gretzky, and then Mark Messier come to New York and become the number one Ranger and deliver the Stanley Cup. It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, it really has been an embarrassment of riches in terms of players that you've seen come through. And one of those players who maybe on the cusp of that, and it is still early in his career, but you know, you've seen some really good goalies that have come through, you know, whether it be Mike Richter, Henrik Lundqvist, of course, and now Igor Shesterkin. That's been a pretty special position for the Rangers organization over the last 25 years as well.
Yeah, they've been very fortunate. Mike Richter came out of the University of Wisconsin, went to the minors, joined the team while John Van Beesbrouck was there. They shared goaltending duties, and ultimately Mike took over as the number one. And in 1994, he had the memorable season. He won the Vezina, was All-Star MVP at Madison Square Garden, and then, of course, winning 16 games in the playoffs and winning the Stanley Cup. It was a magical season for him. Injuries really affected the length of his career. And then after a brief respite, so to speak, in came Henrik Lundqvist after the lockout. And for 15 years, he was the face of the franchise. And the Rangers never had to worry about who was going to be in goal. It was always Henrik Lundqvist. And he came up short winning the Cup, but he got to the Stanley Cup Final. He got to conference finals. He won 7th games. He was just a great, great Ranger. And it was my pleasure to MC the night for him this past January when they raised his number to the rafters. So another great one. And here we're seeing another great season in Igor Shesterkin come in, Russian-born player, coming in while Henrik Lundqvist was still here, trying to take over as the number one goalie from a legend. And here he is with that first full season, having a great season, which most people feel will earn him the Vezina Trophy as the top goalie for the season. And then coming up with the way he's played in his first Stanley Cup playoffs, real playoffs. He played the one game in the bubble, but playing this Stanley Cup playoff season and to play the way he has and to run up a home ice winning streak, it's been outstanding. And we are witnessing, if he can continue to do this for the next few years, we're witnessing something really great in goaltending for the Rangers. They've been very, very fortunate.
They really have. And another thing that they have going for them right now is a group of young players that are playing at a really high level. And I wanted to focus a little bit on Philip Hedl. You know, he scored 8 goals all season. He has 7 in the playoffs, and most recently is where he's been at his best. 2 goals in game 1 of this series. And, you know, a player like Philip Hedl, who is still a young guy, and people do forget that, it could have gone one of 2 ways for him. He could have, you know, continued to struggle and maybe pouted after he got healthy scratched one night. Gerard Gallant has the conversation with him about what they're looking for, and Hedl took the responsibility to ask those questions, and now it's really turned around for them. I guess it's kind of a 2-part question here. 1, how much of that is on Philip Hedl, and how much of you like this game? Plus, how much of that is on Gerard Gallant and the way that he has treated these young players? Because as we know, he's a player's coach and a very good one at that.
I think you hit it on the head. It always comes back to the player, because the player ultimately has to respond. He has to respond to the coaching and what the coaches are telling him he needs to do to become a better player, and a better player in the NHL and a top player. And then, of course, it's the way Gerard Gallant handled the whole situation. Yes, he scratched him one game, but he told him, as you alluded to before, watch Mika Zibanejad. Now, you can't be Mika Zibanejad, but watch the way he plays and try to incorporate some of those things that he does into your game. Well, it didn't happen overnight, but as the season progressed, Philip Hedl got more involved. He stuck his nose in. That's what you mentioned, Gerard Gallant being a player's coach. One of the reasons is all he asks his players to do is play hard, give it everything, battle, keep your compete level up high. And that's what he wanted from Philip Hedl. He kept repeating that in their conversations and practices, not lengthy conversations, just keep that compete level up, battle for pucks along the boards, go to the dirty areas to score goals, drive to the net, don't veer off to the side, stop in front of the goal rather than skating past the net and being out of position so that you can score if you're in front and maybe get a rebound. So all of those things, I think, have started to click in. Philip Hedl, unfortunately, for some of these players, they're so young. They come to the NHL at such a young age, and fans and media, and I guess I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. You want that gratification. You want that success right away. And I know John Davidson, a good friend of mine, the former president of the Rangers, would always preach wherever he's been, in St. Louis and Columbus and New York, patience. You have to have patience with these players. And if you have patience, they will reward you. And I think for Gerard Gallant, the Rangers organization, we're seeing these young players like Philip Hedl, like Alexi Lafreniere is only in his second year, like Kaapo Kakko in his third year. They're starting to reward the team. And Hedl, you pointed out, he's really been productive with his goal scoring, 7 goals and 5 in the last 3 games.
Yeah, and you know, we talked earlier about the embarrassment of riches that this organization has had in terms of great players. But when we look at this current roster, you know, we can talk a lot about Zibanejad and Kreider and Panarin, and the list goes on. But, you know, you mentioned Hedl and Lafreniere and Kakko, and we could throw Keandre Miller and Adam Fox into that mix. This is a really good young team who is only going to grow. I understand their salary cap implications, but this front office, and it's Chris Drury and Jeff Gorton before him, they deserve a lot of credit for how they've built this team basically from the ground up. Yes, they signed Artemi Panarin, but a lot of these guys are, you know, younger players that they traded for or they drafted, and they've developed them into these players. And I mentioned it earlier, this quote-unquote rebuild has been it's been accelerated because of the play of some of these younger guys.
Yeah, it wasn't a total teardown, and to the organization's credit, they made some moves, some signings. You mentioned Artemi Panarin, the trades that they made at the deadline, bringing in Andrew Kopp, who's been a terrific fit, Frank Vetrano, Tyler Mott has been good, Andrew Braun has played very well. You mentioned the young players, young defensemen like Keandre Miller. He may be the Rangers' best defenseman in the playoffs. They've got a really good core four, and then they've got someone who's getting a lot of experience, a first-round draft pick 2 years ago in Braden Schneider, who's playing with a veteran in Justin Braun, and they don't play a lot of minutes. They play about 12, 13 minutes a game, but they help the team. They contribute, and it's been a solid defensive effort for the Rangers in these games, especially against Carolina, and then the start off. But there's that young group. The hardest part, and you touched on it, will be keeping it together. There will be tough decisions to make. Contracts are coming up, and then there are young players that are coming out of their entry-level contracts. So there will be some tough salary cap decisions to be made. But if they can keep a good group, a solid core group together, the Rangers will be in contention for several years to come.
Sam Rosen, Rangers play-by-play, joining Matt Marchese on the Jeff Merrick Show. You know, there's one guy that, to me, he's kind of a throwback on this Rangers team, and that's Jacob Trouba. The game has changed so much that it's now gotten to the point where even when Jacob Trouba hits somebody clean, everybody is calling for his head because he just frankly hit him too hard. How much fun has it been to watch Jacob Trouba?
I've loved it because having been around so long, I've seen the way the game has evolved, and the league always professes they want the physical play, but you want to keep it clean, and certainly they have to balance the physical play with the health and safety of the players. Well, Jacob Trouba, I would say 99% of his hits are clean hits that are legitimate hits. They're not late. They're not dirty. He goes right into a player. I mean, the player that he hits knows he's coming straight at him. It's not from the side. It's not from behind. Jacob Trouba is a clean, tough player. And he's been a physical force all season long, and you can't underestimate how much he's helped Keandre Miller, who's only finishing up his second full season. This is his first NHL playoffs. He's 22 years old, and he plays 23 to 25 minutes a night, and he plays like he's been in the league 8 years. And playing with Jacob Trouba for the most part these last two seasons has really helped his progress as an NHLer.
You know, when we saw in game one, the Rangers play as perfect a game as you could play against the two-time defending champs. And we know that Tampa Bay admittedly was not up to their best, but you know, we've talked about MSG, and you know, you mentioned Igor Shesterkin with the home winning streak. It's a tough place to play. What do you think we get out of the Lightning tonight, and are we going to see a little bit closer of a matchup in game two?
Yeah, I think you'll see similar to the way they played in the series against Toronto, where that went back and forth, and they'll definitely elevate their game. These are championship caliber players up and down the lineup. I agree with you, Matt, that the layoff affected them. The guy I think it affected most was Andrei Vasilevskiy. He was definitely not far from top form, and I think everybody is totally expecting them to be better. Early on in the game, in game one, we saw Ryan McDonough, the former Ranger, former Rangers captain, with a couple of big hits. I think you'll see more of them, and I think you'll see more of the entire team trying to be physical, trying to be aggressive on the forecheck and keep the Rangers pinned in their own zone. It'll be a tough game. I think you mentioned MSG as a place to play. I think for the Rangers, they draw from the crowd. That's where it's more of a positive to the Rangers than a negative toward the opposition. I think the Rangers really draw energy from the enthusiasm, the excitement of the crowd, the energy of the crowd, and it really helps the Rangers play well, and that's one of the reasons they've done so well on home ice thus far in the playoffs.
What's the vibe like in the city? Like, I've been to New York one time, and it was a blast, but there's just so many things to do while you're there. Where is the feeling with the Rangers, as you know, they are now, you know, three wins away from getting to the Stanley Cup final again. Is there a sense of optimism? Is there a sense of, I guess, a hype surrounding the team now? Or do they kind of maybe fall a little bit off to the side just because, you know, New York's a big city and there's lots to do there?
I think that happens during the regular season, Matt, but right now when you get to the playoffs, and there have been this market has been starved for playoff caliber and championship caliber teams. The Giants haven't won the Super Bowl in over 10 years. The Jets have not been a playoff team on the football side. Basketball-wise, the Nets got to the playoffs. They got eliminated. The Knicks were not in the playoffs this year. Baseball-wise, yes, the Yankees and Mets are off to good starts, but it's early in the season. It's only 2 months into the season. So the Rangers, being the top attraction of the three hockey teams in the metropolitan area, and this year, the team that's made the playoffs and is making the run, they draw the attention. And yes, there's a lot of attention wherever I go. If I go to the supermarket, if I go to the cleaners, wherever I'm going, there's someone coming in and say, boy, the team's playing well. Can they do it? What's going on? Will they win tonight? Do you think they can go all the way? People are excited about what the Rangers are doing, and it's great. This is a great sports market. Fans love it. They're into it. They see the games on TV. They hear the games on the radio. And when they see a team that's making a run the way the Rangers are, and surprising a lot of people by how far they're making this run, I think people really get caught up in the enthusiasm and the excitement. And the reality is, and you mentioned it before, you mentioned those players, Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Fox. The Rangers have star caliber players. These aren't just guys that have fallen into the laps or come in for 1 year. These are guys with long-term contracts that are stars in the league. Chris Kreider had a super season. Panarin is an all-star performer. Mika Zibanejad has become an elite center. Adam Fox won the Norris Trophy. So the Rangers have star power, and they have a team that legitimately is going to be around as a contender for several years.
Lots to be excited about in New York as it pertains to the Rangers. Sam, thank you so much for taking some time for me today. It was an honor to speak to you, and good luck to the Rangers the rest of the way. It's going to be a fun ride for sure.
It's really exciting. It's a great time, and it's great for hockey when the Rangers are in the thick of things. I think it picks up hockey in New York, and that it spreads the word of hockey all around. That's great.
It certainly is. Thank you so much for taking some time, Sam. Really appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Matt. Thank you.
There he goes, the legendary Sam Rose. I'd like to thank everybody that joined me on the program today. Elliot Friedman, as he kicks off every show from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Ken Weeb from Sportsnet in Denver, as we recapped Game 2 between the Oilers and Avs. Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Of course, as previously mentioned, the legendary Sam Rosen. For my technical operators, Lance Kennedy and Derek Brandeo, I'm Matt Marchese, filling in for Jeff, who will be back on Monday. You've been listening, and thank you for that, to the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.